You must be very excited, Mr. Belmont.
Oh, excited doesn't come close to describing how I feel.
Rock bottom!
Hello, everybody. This is Again with a Gun with This is what it is. Episode 121. Let's watch Jack Wagner in Falling for Christmas. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Hello.
Hello, Patreon supporters. Thank you so much for your support of Again with This. It is thanks to you that we got to watch Jack Wagner and Lindsay Lohan in Netflix's holiday bauble, Falling for Christmas. And that is actually not sarcasm. I thought this was kind of cute.
I was very charmed by it. I also want to say before we proceed, it's possible that in the previous episode when we teased it, that I called it Fall into Christmas. I have a mental block about this. I called it that consistently in many places, including a pitch email to one of my editors where I tried to make GQ let me interview Jack Wagner. Could have actually happened, except he did not see my email in time. But anyway, if I called it Fall into Christmas and confused you, I apologize. I will do better. It's not Fall into Christmas much as it is not The Halfway Cafe, even though maybe both of those should be the real titles. Sarah, proceed.
Indeed. I did think this was cute. Tara, those of us who follow you on the socials know that you too were at least somewhat charmed by it. I'm glad that assessment has not changed since last we spoke on this. Everyone here lives on Earth and has done so for more than one holiday season. So yeah. I really doubt that anyone needs a plot summary, but just in case, let's just do it real quick.
Yeah.
Christmas started.
This is basically Hallmark.
I thought you were waiting for me to jump in there.
I knew she was flipping to something else, but that long pause was very funny.
Sorry. And David T. Cole with the plot summary. Just kidding. This is basically Hallmark presents It's an Overboard Life, but with a larger budget and Frisco Jones. Here comes the plot, just in case, for all you newborns out there. Lindsay Lohan is playing Sierra Belmont, of course, a luxury hotel heiress whose father, Beauregard, that's Jack Wagner, has flown her east for the holidays to get her set up as the hotel chain's, quote, vice president of atmosphere, which actually sounds like a rad job.
Yeah, she says in a scene, sorry to interrupt you already, but she's like,
oh, no,
it's a fake job. I'm like, that's a very much real job. That's all about the guest experience. Like, that's that's
and
a serious
didn't
thing.
She actually have that job on her own reality show, Lindsay
Maybe.
Lohan, basically.
Yeah. Anyway, proceed.
Anyway. She has been assigned a capo, basically Terry, the underused Chase Ramsey, and a glam squad, but she is less obnoxious than this character brief usually calls for in this situation, even when she collides in the lobby with local lodge owner / Mario Sue, Jack Russell, that's Cord Overstreet, and he gets his complimentary lobby cocoa on her designer clad boob. Jake, who as required by law in these movies, is a widower with a moppet who only wants him to find love and wants nothing else for herself for Christmas, has just rear projection skied down the Belmont Black Diamond with Beauregard, but then still gotten turned down on his investment proposal, which would save his struggling, quaint local lodge, the North Star. This isn't Sierra and Jake's meet cute, not really. While Sierra's influencer boyfriend, Tad, George Young, having the goddamn time of his life and being fucking infectious as hell about it, is trying to propose to Sierra, they both slide off the side of the mountain, but in different directions. Tad ends up in a survivalist side quest with an ice fishing poacher named Ralph, and while they aren't and can't be the main focus of this film, that's a damn shame in my opinion. And while Tad's journey is supposed to play as city slicker flailing, I found this clip from Ted very relatable, clip two.
Oh, brilliant! Just absolutely bloody brilliant! What kind of crap forest doesn't have a cell tower?
I mean, something about the phrasing crap forest just really This really spoke to me.
Yeah, especially since most of the time when you watch these movies, they are a crap forest. And this, like, giving Tad this much to do is so much more than they were required to add. Like, it really shows someone did give a shit about this, unlike most of the Hallmark shit we've watched.
Yeah, and there's this whole, like, side thing. I mean, we can talk more later about Ralph's slightly decorated illegal hut, which, like, yeah, isn't supposed to be there, but has a wreath on the front and, like, clippings from the moon landing.
Yeah.
There's, like, all these little sub bits with Ralph. Mm-hmm. We could talk about it later. First, let's catch up with our heroine, Sierra, who has tumbled into the side of an amnesia fur, where she is discovered unconscious by Jake and his sleigh ride passengers. And speaking of relatable, this is clip two.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Hey, hang tight, guys.
What is it? Oh, it better not be a dead body.
Stop it. You're freaking me out.
Oh, my God.
Is it a dead body?
This couple has been watching too much Dateline, kind of just wants to go back to their room so they can watch more Dateline and get drunk, and I am not here for their little backstory. Anyway, Jake gets Sierra to a hospital, but they don't remember each other from the Swiss mishap earlier. Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Sierra doesn't remember anything because she has filmnesia, which means she has a cosmetic little bump on her head and doesn't remember her old life, but has no other side effects. Motor coordination is fine, mostly. We'll get to it. Also, she's so revolted by the food at the hospital that she agrees to bunk with Jake, his moped Avi, Olivia Perez, and Avi's grandma Alejandra, Alejandra Flores, until someone identifies / retrieves Sierra. So it's time for a montage of everyday chore ineptitude. Sierra, who has renamed herself Sarah, leave us out of this, can't cook an egg. She Bobby Braid is a load of laundry. She gets snarled up in a fitted sheet. Again, relatable. Mm-hmm. But she's not a bitch about any of it. She relates well to Avi without being saccharine, and despite having very little chemistry with Court Overstreet, Lohan really sells the rated G mistletoe hominess these movies run on. Clip four.
Well, it's been a long night.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty beat too, so. Good night.
Good night. Jake?
Uh-huh?
I just wanted to tell you, I don't think I've ever met anyone like you before. Because if I had, I would definitely remember it.
This brings us to roughly our halfway point, so it's time for an increasing competence montage, a decision to move on from one's dead spouse, and our central conflict reasserting itself in the form of Sierra's old life crashing the party she's throwing to save the lodge in her new life, Sierra then getting her memory back, and of course the realization on all sides that this new post-traumatic brain injury Sierra is better off with the simple small-town guy, whilst Tad ends up going on their romantic holiday with Terry.
Yeah.
God bless us, everyone. Reunion, smooching, the lodge gets booked through Easter, Brian Dennehy claws, notches another holiday match, voila, c'est ça. Now, I got to the credits and I was like, first of all, of this ilk, not bad. Yep. I've seen / suffered through way worse. Second of all, Lindsay Lohan looks better than she's looked in years. She looks dewy. She looks happy. She knows how to do this. Tara, you and I talked about this on an episode of Quaid in Full ages ago, but like you forget that she had this like natural charisma that makes you want good things for her, even if like Court Overstreet, you'd be like, I don't know, I feel like you could do better, but if that's what you want, enjoy. I mean, I was like pretty impressed with it, and the credits are just running and I'm making some notes. And then because your girl is basic and loves a blooper reel, what do you know? Here's one now. Clip six.
Would you please tell that large, muscular man behind me to quit stealing my close-up?
And then they do, because they're, like, just in front of some hotel's gym.
Yeah.
And there's some, like, muscly guy, and then they're just, like, laughing. I mean, this was good. Like, for what it is, it's good.
Yeah, it's very winning. And in terms of the Jack Wagner of it all, I'm sure we'll get back to him. But I noticed when I was watching the credits that it says produced by Michael Damian. And I was like, surely not that one. It is Michael Damian, the soap star.
It's directed by his wife, and then they play Kissing Man and Kissing Woman, and they're in the blooper reel.
Yes.
He still looks pretty good, too. Like,
he really does.
You know, I like him a little vintage, but I still would.
He is vintage. He's from the 80s.
I know. So's Jack Wagner. What are we all doing here?
Yes, I love the idea that, like, you know, the two of them and Rick Springfield and John Stamos are like all on a text thread of 80s soap stars who also had pop careers. It's like, yes. Michael Damian's blowing it up. Like, all right, which of you wants to do this? And Wagner's like, all right. Because I, even though they weren't all
on the same
show.
I'm not getting a signal in the 17th hole. Like, nice try. You said that last time.
Yeah. But, you know, we'll get back to Wagner. I won't get into it. But I was very delighted to see that it really was that Michael Damian. Because, God bless, I haven't thought that name in 20 years, 40 years.
Yeah.
Like, really a long time.
Rock on.
Yeah.
As those dudes' singles went, I mean, Springfield is always going to stomp the yard. But
yes.
Damian's wasn't bad.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Wagner's was bad, but I still love it.
Anyway, back to Lindsay. She does look great. She's not doing that weird accent anymore. And like, considering the last thing most of us saw her do on moving pictures was that weird thing a few years ago when she was in Istanbul and she like filmed herself following this woman and her kids and like basically accusing this lady of trafficking them, and when was speaking in this weird like
I forgot about that
mid-European accent where everyone was like, I don't even know what this is supposed to be, but it's not how she sounds. She's from New Jersey. Like, it was refreshing to see her like back herself. Yeah, she looks great. She looks healthy. She looked like she was having fun. She looked like she was taking it seriously. Like, we've certainly seen plenty of these where the stars act like they're above it, and she's not. She knows this is important to her career, even though her leading man is like many fame rungs below her. But she came to play, and she's sweet. She has to be sweet in a role like this, and she is.
Yeah. Well, and to sort of come back in something like this that's so family friendly, like, you and I watched that whole like Oprah tries to be her parole officer reality show that was like just really upsetting. It was just like watching someone circling a drain, and it was so frustrating, and she just would not be able to get out of bed and deal with adult life.
Yeah.
Until like 2 p.m. And there was so much of this that's like, it's very by numbers, like Hallmark Christmas movie, parent replacement, sort of wish fulfillment, longing, all of this stuff that had an extra layer. Like, you know, there's a little scene where she and her dad are just talking about like that. She's like, I just don't want to disappoint you. And he's like, I doubt that that could happen. And you just think about like her fucking shitty fame whore parents and how much they have to answer for, especially her dad.
Yeah.
Anyway, this seems like a good time to play a Jay Waggy clip 5.
I just don't want to disappoint you.
I don't think you could do that, honey.
Oh, I haven't seen this in a while.
Your mother gave me that in Stade. She said that the little girl reminded her of you. I'm surprised you remember. You're only 5, weren't she?
I remember her perfume and her laugh. How she used to brush my hair. This hotel reminds me so much of her. I still miss her.
Me too.
There is no little girl in that snow globe. I freeze framed and step through it. There's like some reindeer. I'm like, what? What did her mom die of exactly? Was it cataracts? And there's some Like, there are some line jumping problems. They don't have perfect father-daughter chemistry, but, like, given that this is not how I feel like most parents and children talk about a parent who has been gone for this long, mm-hmm. or about expectations, given that Lindsay Lohan in real life, like, she looks younger here, I would say, but she's 36.
Yeah.
They both sell it.
Yeah.
And he, when we love him the most on Melrose, is when he's like, what the? Like, yeah. Having these, like, outsized reactions to what a cartoon Michael Mancini is. And he's very good at that, like, disgusted Hallmark grandpa age dad thing.
Yes.
There's some split endsy stuff happening with the hair that I don't love. But yeah. He should try to get more of these because he's good at it. And he does Hallmark stuff already. Like, move over to Netflix. It's more prestige-y. The money's probably better.
It's true. He has a whole series on Hallmark, which we have talked about on our friends' podcast, It's Christmas Town, The Wedding March. They are now on The Wedding March 5. And I think at this point they are edging out him and Bissette, who are the leads, or started out being the leads in that. But yeah, he's also on When Calls the Heart, the Hallmark TV series that is set in the Yukon or something. It's set somewhere in Canada.
It's the one Lori Loughlin got her ass fired off of for bribing a college admissions officer.
Exactly. And it is,
I would say allegedly, but whatever. She's out already. It's fine.
Right. It's mostly a vehicle for, like, the stars that keep showing up in all of their movies. Like, when you see the promos, then you will see those faces in promos for all of their Christmas fair, because they just reuse the same actors. And there's been plenty of coverage of this. We don't have to go over it. But yeah, he's like, some kind of law enforcement person in this town. Mm-hmm. He looks good in the weird, like, shawl collared vests that they put him in that are, like, kind of period, but also not really. But with regard to the hair, I did wonder, do you think it's his or is it a piece? I was trying to tell.
I was going to ask you, because you're wig cop.
Right. I think it's possible.
I'm merely a probationary officer on the wig on WPD. but yeah, I mean, the particular quality of the split ends led me to believe that it is actually his. And it was just, like, ironed.
Right.
For some reason. And I looked at the front and it didn't look lacy. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. What was your feeling?
I mean, the thing that is most suggestive that it is really his hair is that Ralph Macchio's looks worse on Cobra Kai. And I'm pretty sure Ralph Macchio has more money than Jack Wagner, probably. So it's likely that it's just not great hair that is aging and is probably, like, overprocessed, because it's still blonde. And you know he's probably full white at this point. He's got to be in his 70s, late 60s anyway. He's old.
Yeah, I think late 60s.
Yeah.
I think he was born in, actually, he might be younger than my husband. I feel like I should know this. So let's keep talking about his hair. How do we feel about the scratchy voice? Because this could also be sort of some hand-in-hand aging issues that might indicate treatment for something.
Oh.
I don't know.
I didn't really notice that, to be honest. But I do think he knows, you know, we always say he understands the assignment. He gets the pitch of what this is going for, obviously, from being on Hallmark. And this is essentially Hallmark without Hallmark. This is a Hallmark where people are allowed to go on vacation with same-sex partners at the end if they want. That doesn't happen very much. Or, like, someone who starts out presenting straight, then, you know, is queer, surprise, like, oh, wow, Tad was bisexual the whole time. Because it doesn't seem to be any crisis. He's just like, well, I'm not going on this vacation with Sierra, so how about you? Man, I barely know. And Terry's like, totally. And I love that.
Yeah, I feel like the rest of the characters were like, and finally.
Yes. Yes.
But, Sparkle has found its level. Jack Wagner just turned 63.
Oh, okay. I apologize for thinking he was in his 70s.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like he does have one of those faces, and also with, like, aging soap stars, like they look about 58 until they look 90. So he's just like kind of in that weird place where it's like he's any age and no age.
Yeah. But he's, I thought he was, he is off screen for basically the whole middle of the movie, where when Sierra has amnesia, he's off screen. And this, which is why it takes until he comes back and asks where she is for them to even like kind of acknowledge at the resort, like, oh, she might be missing. And then he springs into action when he gets back from whatever business trip he was on. But the scenes they have together, I also feel like you can feel from him, he's taking care of her. Like, I think he also, as an actor, understands she's coming from, you know, a place of fragility, like in general, but also in her career. And so, especially in that clip that you played, I felt like you sort of feel him like holding her in his hand in a way, and that was really touching and fatherly. So I like them.
Yeah. I thought they were good. I would be fine if this were like a sort of ongoing series.
Sure.
I would be fine watching more Christmassy output. Like, I think that Netflix sort of understands the parts of Hallmark movies that are like comforting and samey. Mm-hmm. And then everything else they just throw out and are like, why don't we spend some fucking money on the costumes? We're Netflix. Why not? So
yeah.
I do appreciate that. And yeah, this was a surprising pleasure.
Yeah. And who knows, like, to your point, maybe we'll be back here next year talking about the sequel.
Hope so.
Hello, everybody. This is Again with This, episode 124. Let's watch Heather Locklear in her first Spin City Christmas episode. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara.
Hello, Patreon supporters. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your support. Thank you for letting us bend your ear about these various other ventures that our Starverse actors have done. We are still in the midst of the holiday season, still with the holiday programming, and this week we're going to be talking about Spin City Season 4, Episode 12, My Dinner with Caitlin. It is Episode 13 on Pluto TV. I don't know why. It aired December 21st, 1999 on ABC. Our co-writers are Philip Wen and Bill Callahan. Philip Wen is credited as a supervising producer on that episode of Eight Simple Rules that we watched for the Patreon a few months ago, believe it or not.
Yeah, that. Yep. Okay.
You believe it. Is his last IMDb credit, by the way. And Bill Callahan's still around. He was an executive producer on The Goldbergs until 2020. He also worked on The New Head of the Class last year, speaking of. Yeah, okay, right. That scans. Our director is Andy Kadiff. He has done tons of multicam shows, including Alexa and Katie, which Tiffany Thiessen is on. We've talked about Spin City before when I made Sarah watch the episode that Luke Perry guest starred in. So if you don't remember that one, the premise is we're at the mayor's office in New York City and things are wacky. However,
yeah, I always forget that it's supposed to be New York City. Like, guys, make up a city next time.
I think they may have actually shot in New York, but I might be wrong about that. This season, however, is a little different than the last one that we talked about because the mayor is running for re-election and he has hired a campaign manager played by Heather Locklear. She steps into the new series regular role of Caitlin Moore. Just months after the end of Melrose Place, this is, of course, Christmas 99. That was in the spring of 99. And Michael J. Fox had just announced his diagnosis of Parkinson's disease the year before this. So it was known and reported at the time that Locklear's function was partly to take some of the workload off of him. He plays the lead character, Mike Flaherty, the deputy mayor. And so we'll get to Caitlin and Mike. Right now, let us go through the underplots of the episode. And they are under. I think it's fair to say. Starting with our C plot, Mayor and Swedes. This is the sitcom-iest plot for sure.
Mm-hmm.
The mayor hurts his back in a chin-up bar pratfall. So Stuart, who's played by Alan Ruck, oh, the mayor is Barry Bostwick, if I didn't say that before. Stuart has to arrange for a masseuse to do an in-call. And wouldn't you know it, it's the same night the mayor is supposed to meet with the Swedish ambassador. So he gets Stuart to cover for him with her. And then they both end up being Swedish women, and the mayor somehow thinks that someone in a business suit is there to give him a massage and pulls his pants down. Like, come on now.
I mean, our current mayor is pretty stupid. Like, my notes are like, I just don't believe a guy this lunkheaded could be the mayor of New York. Oh, right, Eric Adams. So, yeah.
Oh, Eric Adams, who made headlines earlier this year by saying he wanted his mayor's salary in crypto? Got it. It was screamingly obvious where this was going as soon as the word Swedish was uttered, but I at least
sure was
admired the restraint that they didn't return to the misunderstanding. It was like, Stuart thinks this lady's the ambassador, mayor thinks this lady is the masseuse, that's it, and fine.
There was some good Alan Ruck trying to do pull-ups comedy and callbacks that, I mean, it's very sitcom-y, but he commits, and it was well done.
Yeah,
for that.
I also liked the mayor's t-shirt. He's got like, it's like a little Elvis-y sort of disco guy on it doing mm-hmm. a little pose. Other than that, really nothing else to compliment. Mayor, moving on.
No, not really.
Moving on to our B plot, Paul's headband. Nikki, who's played by Connie Britton, is running a clothing drive for unhoused people. Here are some issues with it. Apparently, this is the kind of clothing drive where individuals come to a government office one at a time and root through a box for anything they might want. Not how clothing drives work. You send it to a place where clients can go and look for stuff that's hanging up on hangers with a little dignity.
Mm-hmm.
The other problem with the storyline is Nikki's hair is the worst I've ever seen on any Connie Britton character. It's very curly. I think it's a perm. But it's so crispy for like 99. We weren't doing that anymore. That's like some late 80s curl.
Yeah, we weren't. And it's not, I mean, it's just disconcerting. Also, it's supposed to be the end of December.
Yes.
It's like Christmas Eve or something. And she's wearing a sleeveless, like light chambray situation.
Yeah.
Like, okay, government offices can be overheated, but everybody else has a turtleneck on.
Well, yes. Caitlin at least has a turtleneck, a sleeveless top, but she's in sleeveless. She wears a sleeveless dress to the party later. Like, it's way too much sleeveless.
Yeah.
Also, Nikki, the Connie Britton character, her dress, like, comes together with, like, a train in the back at the office. Like, what is this garment?
Yeah, and there's a, like, inverted V that's, like, you know, only on TV does anyone wear a peignoir, and then, like, it's on a regular dress. Like, why... Mm-hmm. Are you doing this to Connie Britton? She deserves better. Please, wrap dresses, come and save us all.
Yes. Well, as we know, she gets much better than this. So thank God.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, Richard Kind, decides that a red, white, and blue headband in the box might be one that John McEnroe himself wore in a tennis match and gets obsessed with it, ignoring all of Nikki's attempts to get him to return it to the donation box. And eventually we get this when Paul is aggressively flailing at a fly swatter around the office and James is up on a ladder doing something. Clip one.
Hey, Paul, you're in trouble. Mike's looking for the press release you promised him.
I put it in your inbox this morning. It's right there.
It's my outbox.
Are you crazy? That's in.
Out.
How can you possibly call that out? That's in.
Out.
You cannot be serious. That is clearly in. How incompetent can you be?
All right. I mean.
I thought that was funny.
I did too. Kind, it's corny, but Kind puts it over. Like,
yeah,
he's
yeah,
good.
Exactly. Well put.
Ending this one on Paul stalking Nikki's unhoused client and snatching the headband off him is probably not how this one would have ended if this episode aired in our era. Although he does also run into a lamppost and then goes, worth it. It's fine.
Yeah.
Finally, let's get to Heather. Christmas party misunderstanding hijinks is our A plot. So Mike and Caitlin, as the characters played by the two highest status actors on the show, obviously are intended to end up together. And spoiler, they eventually do. But at this point in the run, they're both just flirting a lot. The sit in this particular sitcom episode is that Mike asks Caitlin to his holiday party in a way that makes it sound like it's a date. And when she accepts and he realizes what that could mean, he decides to make that version of the night a reality and cancels the party. But then James, Alexander Chaplin, who we heard up on the ladder in the previous clip, he tells Caitlin it's a party. So when she shows up at Mike's house for what he's trying to make a date, she has brought a very tall guy named Rob, whom Mike can't even try to dominate with his career success. Clip two.
Well, as deputy mayor, sure, I have a lot of power, but what keeps me going is knowing that I make a difference in people's lives. What do you do, Rob?
I'm a heart surgeon. I work mostly with kids.
So you went for the money.
Again, not great writing, but these are such pros. I mean, Michael J. Fox in particular has been doing this since he was an actual teenager, so he knows.
Yeah.
He knows how to put a line over.
Mm-hmm.
He eventually calls everyone else who thought they were going to have the night off from the mandatory fun and makes them show up to save his pride. But then Carter, Michael Boatman, tells Mike that Caitlin's date actually is not a doctor. Clip three.
So, what are you going to do now?
I don't know. It's her move. But I'll tell you this much. Nothing's going to happen as long as she's dating Dr. Third Wheel over there.
Him? He's a bartender.
What?
When Caitlin took me to lunch yesterday, I'm pretty sure he's the guy behind the bar.
Why would she bring some bartender she doesn't even know to my party?
Maybe she had to scare up a date at the last minute.
Maybe she thought it was a date, too. We shouldn't play games, Mike. We should be honest, Mike. We should eat sushi off the small of my back, Mike.
She never said that.
It was implied.
Okay. Obviously, I initially started that clip with, he's a bartender, but I had to include Dr. Third Wheel. Proceed, Sarah.
Fifth Wheel.
The sushi line would be a lot ickier in another actor's mouth, but coming from him and seeing him with her, like, you know, she is the dominant one in that relationship, so it's fine, whatever. Also, who wouldn't want to eat sushi off her back, honestly?
Yeah, seriously.
Anyway, Caitlin and Mike both finally come clean on their misapprehensions, but they end the episode without either of them admitting the wildly obvious they like each other, because that's old-timey sitcom season pacing for you. This is only halfway through. We still got 5,000 episodes to go. A few complaints about this plot line. Canceling a party for all your direct reports on hours' notice is a real dick move. The only worst thing is then making them come after all when they thought they were going to have the night off.
Yeah.
And I guess they kind of explain this when they get to, like, Mike calling James and telling him to put back on the liquor order that he canceled. But he also, like, was he just going to buy snacks? After work, he has nothing in the house. Like, he serves Caitlin and Rob a bowl of croutons and Fruit Loops, which he calls Fruit Loops, which, fine. But also weird. Like, you don't even have pretzels? You had nothing? You were going to do all of this after work? You work in government. Your workday ends at, like, 8:30.
Well, and were you just expecting everyone else to bring chips?
Right.
I mean, yeah, that did lead to that good callback, which was like he at some point like dumps that
the dinner
or like duck a l'orange he pretended that he made but ordered in.
Yes.
Into the bowl of Fruit Loops.
Mm-hmm.
And then like towards the end, this one guy's like, yeah, I'm making some more Fruit Loops. Where do you keep the duck? Like,
that's good.
This is such corny Catskillsy shit. But like their ability to slot a callback where like I'm about to get sort of like bored and antsy because it's so old timey sitcom-y. Mm-hmm. And then they just are like, OK, this is what it is, but we're going to do it as well as we possibly can.
Yes.
I mean, I guess I respect that. Like the absolutely horrible hotline treatment is like cringy. Like
that was
very
note.
Difficult to watch, but yeah.
Yes. Yeah. What happened that James's plot line is that he's volunteering on this crisis hotline and decides to bring a bunch of the clients that called him, I guess, to this party. And then it's so their depression can basically be a visual punchline, and it's not funny and not cute.
Yeah. And there's a number of like just jokes about jumpers and
yeah.
It's like, have a couple beers and then go and look off the side of the Brooklyn Bridge and contemplate how lucky you are to be alive. And like, it's all very, he's like filing his nails practically during it. And it's like, I understand that this is a sitcom, but find another way to be funny about this or just don't do it.
Yeah. Let's get to La Locklear. We're just about halfway through the season at this point. This is episode 12 of her playing this character that she started in September. And I will admit, I did not watch the show at the time. And so this was all new to me. And discovering that she was playing a character who was not quick was upsetting. Let's hear clip four.
You just don't like my order because it's mine.
No, I didn't like it because it's incorrect.
Yeah? Well, you're incorrect.
Could you possibly want her anymore?
Kurt, to tell you the truth, she doesn't really do it for me.
Oh, please, Mike. She almost does it for me. Could cut the sexual tension in here with a knife.
Hey, that's not sexual tension. That's bickering.
Okay, what I should have said is, I know you like to be the smartest person in the room, so I'll leave.
Oh, you know, Caitlin, they're not called comebacks because you leave and then come back.
Oh, yeah? Well...
No, 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 no. This is not the flavor of comedic lady character you get Heather Locklear to play. Like,
no, and she's not especially good at that ditzy...
No!
You know, adorkable, like, no. She's a battle axe. Sharpen it up.
Yes. This is not the comedic, like, sparky energy you want between these characters. Like, he should not be getting any over on her quip-wise. Mm-mm. But the other annoying thing about it is that she's not quick until the plot needs her to be, and that's clip five.
Rob, can you settle a bet for Carter and me? How many bones are there in the human body?
Mike, he's a heart surgeon.
Oh, right. Sorry. How many hearts?
You don't have to answer that.
But I know this one.
Could you make me a martini?
Dry or wet?
Dry.
Over or up?
Up.
Olive or onion?
Just go.
You know, my mom wanted me to be a doctor, but couldn't stand the sight of gin.
So
all right, I guess you've got this all figured out, so I might as well come clean. Rob lost a guy on the table today. His head's really messed up.
That's what we want from her. Like, for her to be funny, like, not the butt of the joke, you know?
Right.
I will say, like, one of the strengths of Michael J. Fox as a sitcom performer, and in general, he did this on The Good Wife, too, was, like, to make his height a visual joke. And so, like, part of, like, her date is so tall, like, he towers over her, but he really towers over Michael J. Fox. And it's funny to see her next to Fox, because she looks tall compared to him. And we know from Melrose, where she's opposite all those, like, tree trunk soap
buildings
guys,
yeah, totally,
that she's teeny. And so that was amusing to me.
Yeah. And I mean, he's such a pleasure,
yeah,
to watch, truly.
Mm-hmm.
And always has been. Like, he just has, like, his evident pleasure in, like, getting a good line to land, but also, like, he does have a way of sometimes, like, tipping it to the audience and just being like, like, watch while I do this. That ordinarily, I'm like, I'm not about that, but he sells it. He's really good.
Yeah.
As, you know, the other person watching the Michael J. Fox show, you know that that was one of the things that we both enjoyed about it, even though even Tracy Pollan was like, I'm good. They're going to cancel this.
Yeah, that's true. We did both watch that. How did you like the two of them together?
I mean, I think it's what you said. This sort of, like, broad... She's, you know, stupid if that's what the writing calls for until she's not. That's not playing to her strengths.
Yeah.
She also looks very plastic. Like, maybe it's the lighting, but she, I think, maybe had something additional added to the face that had not quite settled down yet. Mm. And she seemed a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Until the end, like the second half of the episode, when she could be a little more Amanda. Like, not that she can't be funny, but it needed to just be closer to what she can do better. Mm-hmm. So then she seemed comfortable. And also when she's next to, you know, a date who's a foot and a half taller than her, that's like her wheelhouse.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, she's also a pro, but this kind of sitcominess, like, yeah, she just seemed a little itchy still in this role. I don't know what you thought.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, it's possible that she settled into it later because she ended up doing it for two more seasons after this. I'm not sure we will revisit those because Charlie Sheen arrives to be the male lead at a certain point and no thank you.
Yeah, no thanks.
But she also returned to work with Bill Lawrence, who created this show, co-created it, on Scrubs for a guest shot fairly early on, I think season two. And her in a single cam setting doing comedy was much sparkier, I think. Like, the editing can help her more, too. Not that she needs help editing, but, like, it's a different vibe. And I think it suits her better. And that might be what I subject you to the next time we try to watch Heather Locklear in a comedic mode. But anyway, thank you for suffering through this one, Sarah. Merry Christmas.
I actually can still stand the sight of gin, so I'm going to go have some. Merry Christmas.